two, one, two, three.
Welcome, everybody, to the State of the Outdoors podcast. This is where we work really hard to keep sportsmen and sportswomen informed about what's going on at the state and federal level with hunting, fishing, trapping, boating, public lands, public waters, policy and law, and trying to get everybody to the point where they feel comfortable enough and informed enough to participate. Because it's your participation as sportsmen and women that makes a difference. Doesn't matter if you agree with us. It just matters whether or not you participate. We try not to editorialize. We try not to tell you, you know, how you should think or what to think. We just want to get you informed in an hour or a little bit more on all the things that are going on that would take the average person who just doesn't have the time to do it. A couple hours of research and reading, and we want to do that for you. We've had a format change at State of the Outdoors podcast here, where four times a year, former 4th District Commissioner, Mr. Brian Mackey, and I are going over what happened at the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources Commission meeting. And then the other 8 months of the year, my former original co-host, Mr. Ben Bishop, who was on the board of directors at Kentucky Chapter Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Ben and I go over what's going on at the national and international level so that everyone is informed. And to that point, I would like to welcome Ben back to the podcast. What's up, brother?
It is great to be back. It's been a while since I've been on a podcast or this particular podcast, but I'm probably well over a year or so. But it's good to be back.
Well, you do for all the podcasts that I do, you do all of the sound engineering stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're still extremely well connected with what we're doing. It just gets to the point where, you know, life kind of sort of can get in the way.
And it tends to do so.
And you've had some excellent personal successes in the last year and a half with getting married and becoming a father and all that stuff. So If our listeners don't remember that, there you go. Congratulations to Ben.
Thank you.
So what have you been up to, man?
Like I said, other than all the changes in the personal life, just the normal. I've been able to get out and do some fishing this spring and summer. Had a pretty unsuccessful turkey season. I guess we can go back that far since I haven't been on since then. just the normal outdoor stuff. This time of year is more fishing and stuff for me, and just local ponds and stuff like that. Nothing major for me.
Yeah. So you guys may have just heard our waitress Jennifer ask if we were good for beer. We are broadcasting live from Mordecai's at in Springfield, Kentucky, Ben's hometown. Mm-hmm. And I am a huge fan of getting a mess of fish from a farm pond for dinner.
Oh, yeah. Cooking it up that night.
Man, that is – it's fresh. It's right out of the water. It's good to go. Do you throw them on ice immediately, or do you put them in a live well or bucket of water or stringer? How do you normally do it?
I mean, I've done both. Normally, I put them on a stringer, though.
Okay.
Normally.
Yeah. If I'm walking around the lake, and some of these farm ponds are more like lakes, some of these places that I have access to are – 6 or 7 acres, so it's not, you know, it's not like you're going to carry a bucket of ice with you. But as soon as I get them back over to the truck, they go on ice for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I have done it before. You know, I catch them in straight out of the water into a cooler of ice, but I don't do that anymore.
That's usually on my boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's the only option, yeah.
On our Grizzled Outdoors podcast, where I'm a co-host and you do the sound engineering for that, we had a really well-known chef named Michael Penley, who works for Realtree and some other outdoor periodicals, you know, what we used to call magazines, which are all online now.
Right.
Can you believe there's no such thing as a paper
right
Field and Stream anymore? Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a paper Sports of Field anymore.
It's wild.
It's all online.
I miss the tangible.
I do too. But if you have a membership like Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, you get Backcountry Journal. If you have a membership in Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, you get Bugle. If you have a membership in the National Deer Alliance, which used to be the Quality Deer Management Association and the National Deer Association merged to become the National Deer Alliance, then you still get Quality Whitetails Magazine, which is a great magazine. All those conservation groups, which we encourage people to be members of because they defend what we do at the state and federal level, they still have a magazine.
Yeah.
And they tend to stack up on me, I'm not going to lie. I'll have a rainy Saturday where I'll go through eight of them, but they stack up on me. I've been fishing myself. I've started preparing for Out West a little bit, but I retired from teaching, or I quit teaching this year. I was teaching high school for a number of years after I retired from the service, and unexpectedly I'm unemployed again. Retired, right?
Right.
And so I didn't have a plan for this fall. I didn't put in for any big game tags out west, and so what I've told one of my you know great friends is, if he pulls a landowner tag and he's working all kinds of connections to pull a landowner tag for mule deer in between an elk hunt and another hunt he's got out west, that I'll go with my camera, and then I'm gonna take myself as a reward for being retired again. I am going to take myself surf fishing and Cape Hatteras, and somebody I look up to in the outdoor space, a guy named Hal Herring, who is the host of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers podcast and Blast podcast. Hal was interviewed for the Backcountry Journal, and one of the questions they always ask in those interviews is if you could have a trip anywhere on public, where would you go? And it shocked me. Hal's answer is, I would surf fish where the Labrador Current and the Gulf Stream Current meet, which is just off Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. And I thought, man, that's awesome. So I got buddies from North Carolina. I called them, and I'm like, you know, what do I do? And they're like, wait until after Labor Day. That's all, like, touristy. Mm-hmm. The fishing is amazing in the spring and the fall. Not so much during the heat of the summer. But wait until after Labor Day. And so I made some reservations for after Labor Day in the town there. And the prices went down almost 50%.
Wow.
So I was going to camp, but last time I camped, Nag's Head, Assateague Island, Chincoteague Island, Cape Hatteras, you know, all down from like the Delmarva Peninsula, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. They call that the Delmarva Peninsula.
Yeah.
All the way down to like coastal Virginia into North Carolina. The mosquitoes were just brutal. And so I was like, man, maybe if I push it further in the fall. And so I started looking at prices, and holy crap, the prices come down after Labor Day. I got a bed and breakfast for $133 a night, and it was way more than that before Labor Day.
Yeah.
And it comes with a real cooked breakfast. So I'll probably drag my old 52-year-old butt down to the breakfasts. You know, I probably won't be out there surf fishing until 8:30. I'm not gonna kill myself, but I'm gonna go out and meditate about what's next. You know, I think I want to write another book, something like that.
Yeah, that'll be good. But now, when you do that, is there a specific target species, or is it just?
Yeah. So the program for me is a little bit lighter tackle surf rods, and I actually will use floating jig heads on a dropper rig. So I'll have like a pyramid sinker off of a barrel swivel, and that'll only be on like 8-pound test from the barrel swivel to the sinkers, because if it gets hooked up in some kind of rocks or some kind of structure offshore, I just lose the sinker. I don't lose the whole rig, because I can pop it off that 8-pound test. And then I'll have a dropper rig off a 20-pound fluorocarbon with two baits. And so I'll start off with the lighter rigs, and at the end of those droppers, I'll have floating jig heads, which people normally use, you know, Great Lakes, Canada, for like walleye and stuff. And I'll just bait that with a chunk of shrimp. And what I'm trying to catch there is some of the smaller fish that you can use as bait. And as soon as I catch one of those, then I break out the big surf tackle.
Yeah.
Stuff where I usually, like off New Jersey's coast years ago, I would be into the stripers all day long. Catch some bluefish and some stingrays in there is like bycatch, but catch enough stripers to eat is awesome. So that's kind of the program, is catch bait on a rod and reel, bait up the 30-pound to 40-pound class surf rods, which are 9 feet long. They're huge.
Yeah.
They're huge. So that's kind of be the program. If I get bad weather, I'm just going to do some exploring. But, yeah, that's what's up with that. So we don't cover, when you and I podcast now, we really don't cover what's going on at the Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting. But I do want to mention that we have a big trophy catfish issue still going on. We still have a depletion of our trophy catfish resources on the Ohio River that has come through commercial fishing. And we have the department issues, I think it's four. Yeah, it's four trophy catfish, four or five trophy catfish permits where all those guys do is catch trophy cats. And they're allowed five a day. And flatheads for recreational fishermen is 28 inches to be a trophy. And that's about an 18 to 20-year-old fish. For a commercial fisherman, it's 30 inches for a trophy channel. For a flathead or a blue, a trophy is 35 for recreational fishermen. It's 40 inches for a commercial fisherman. And basically, yeah, it is 15 permit. Or it is, let's see, 60 fish a day, and they're allowed four each. So what is that, 15?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, commercial fishermen can take up to, if they fill their limit daily on the Ohio, they can take 60 fish a day out of the Ohio that are 20 to 30 years old.
Yeah.
And so the catfish tournament fishermen, there used to be a Monster Cats tournament out of like the Owensboro area years ago that would get about 200 boats. That's a huge economic impact.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
They quit doing that tournament because they're not catching the big fish anymore. And now there's a proposal to our Fish and Wildlife Commission to align the recreational and trophy catfish size limits. Well, what that's going to do is bring down the commercial trophy catfish size limit for a blue or a flathead of 40 inches down to the recreational 35-inch level.
Yeah.
So it's going to make more fish available to these trophy catfishermen, to these commercial trophy catfishermen. And then it's going to move the 30-inch channel to 28, which is the recreational limit. So they want to align the commercial and the recreational size limits, but that's bringing the size limit down for commercial, which means they'll be able to harvest even more.
Yeah.
And here's the ugly part. Those fish are all going to pay lakes and where they're going to die. There's not the forage. There's not the oxygen content. There's not the water quality required or necessary to keep these giant old 20-plus-year-old fish alive. So that's going to be the hot button issue at the Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting on September 22nd. So anybody listening to this that cares, you can expect that to be on the agenda at the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources Commission meeting on September 22nd. Now, moving into what we normally do on this podcast, the national issues. What's got your attention, man?
We will start off talking about RAWA again. I mean, that's even
recovering America's Wildlife Act.
Even since the last time I was on here, we were still talking about RAWA. So the wheels of government do turn slow. And RAWA is gonna dedicate almost $1.4 billion annually to your state, tribal, fish and wildlife agencies to help manage your at-risk species and prevent them from being added to the federal threatened or endangered species list. And this was put forth by Senators Martin Heinrich and Tom Tillis, which is a bipartisan effort. And this is gonna secure the funds for state fish and wildlife agencies. And I know it's targeting at-risk species, but at the same time, all the habitat work and all this stuff is going to affect your game species as well, like your whitetail, pronghorn, rabbits, whatever.
Yeah.
It's all one.
So what I recently learned about this, so RAWA started out of the AFWA, the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, which is where all of our, like, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, Indiana Department of Natural Resources, Kentucky Department of Natural Resources, Kentucky Department of Wildlife and Natural Resources, all of the state agencies are members of AFWA, the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. And AFWA got together and they got a blue ribbon panel together because some legislators encouraged them. And like Johnny Morris, who owned Bass Pro, who now owns Bass Pro and Cabela's, was a member of that blue ribbon panel. And they came up with, how do we fix what's going on? And what was going on was the money that hunters and fishers and trappers and boaters put into our fish and wildlife agencies, whether it's through license sales, boat registration, or it's through the excise taxes known as Pittman-Robertson and Dingell-Johnson, that money comes from hunters, fishers, trappers, and boaters, but it covers all wildlife.
Yeah.
There's no specific money set aside in those monies for monarch butterflies, for bats, for hellbenders, which is a species of concern in Kentucky, you know, one of those giant salamanders.
Yep.
There's no money set aside for that. What I learned recently through listening to the Department of Fish and Wildlife has an outdoor show called Kentucky Afield. Kentucky Afield also has a podcast, and they did a podcast on the state's wildlife action plan. And I'd never heard of this. As much as you and I are connected to public lands, public waters, wildlife, and policy, I'd never heard of it. Apparently, in 2005, the Department of Interior through U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service started asking each state game and fish agency or wildlife and parks, whatever, for an action plan for at-risk species. And we'd never done it before in Kentucky, never been done anywhere. Kentucky got on board with that and were required to do it by 2010. But we got ours done in 2013. Or excuse me, I'm getting this a little wrong. Ours was required by 2015. And we got it done in 2013, and it's required every 10 years. So ours is renewing now in 2023. So it's off cycle kind of with all the other states because the deadline I believe was 2015 for the second plan. So this is really the third iteration, as my memory serves me, but it's called the State Wildlife Action Plan. And basically what it does is it identifies at-risk species in the state. They can be game animals, like on our at-risk species plan, on our SWAP plan, SWAP, S-W-A-P, State Wildlife Action Plan. Our SWAP plan is like swamp rabbits. That is a huntable species in Kentucky, but there's not enough of them.
Yeah.
So they become a species of concern, and then we have an action plan in the action plan just for swamp rabbits. It's for habitat. It's for how to make more swamp rabbits. And if RAWA were funded, it gets funded against your state wildlife action plan. So every state has to put in an action plan, and it talks about habitat, you know, land and water, you know, issues associated with growing the species to get them away from being a species of greatest concern.
Mm-hmm.
So that blew my mind. I had no idea we even had that plan.
Yeah.
Of course, there have only been two or three iterations of them, and they're only due every 10 years.
Yeah.
And so bottom line, the state plan right now in Kentucky went up for 30 days of public comment on the 15th. And so it'll be through the middle of September that you can give public comment. But that plan is just for at-risk species, not necessarily game species.
Yeah.
And if RAWA gets funded, it's those action plans for each at-risk species inside of the overall state wildlife action plan is how we get that money. Yeah. I'd always wondered how that RAWA money was going to be cut up.
You're putting forth your own, I guess, criteria, your game plan of what you're going to do if granted these funds, and then we'll be divvied from there.
Yep, absolutely. So RAWA got a real good shot at getting through this next Congress. Ladies and gentlemen, if you really, really want to, if you're a big fan of like songbirds, you know, barn owls, whatever, those are probably some species that's probably on your state's action plan, and you want to talk to your federal legislators about passing RAWA.
Yep. And next up, we have another bipartisan effort, the Voluntary Public Access Improvement Act. And that's led by Senator Steve Daines and Michael Bennett and Roger Marshall. And what that's going to do is reauthorize a program and increase funding from $50 million to $150 million over the next 5 years. And there's also companion legislation led by Representative Debbie Dingell and Dusty Johnson, and which has been introduced into the House of Representatives.
You got to love those names.
Oh, I know. Dingell
and Johnson.
Dingell and Johnson.
I think Debbie Dingell is actually a direct descendant of the original Dingell who got the Dingell-Johnson Act passed, which is our excise tax on fishing and boating.
Yeah.
I think she's a direct descendant of that same Dingell.
So the Voluntary Public Access Improvement Act, it operates by extending competitive grants to state and tribal governments, and the grants are going to be used to incentivize private landowners to voluntarily allow public access. The Voluntary Public Access Improvement Act would triple the impact of this widely utilized program. And so after that, we're going to...
So if you've ever hunted out west in a place like Kansas, they have what are called walk-in areas. Those are volunteer public access. There's not enough public in, you know, some of the states out west, especially like Texas, Nevada, Kansas, Iowa. They sold all of their original state education land. So when states wrote their constitutions and sent them to the federal government to be approved, the federal government granted them public land that was supposed to be used to generate revenue to help pay for public schools. Most of those states couldn't manage those lands and just sold them. And so they're mostly private. So now we don't have enough access for hunting, fishing, trapping, boating, and all the things we love to do. That's what that program's working on, the volunteer access. And I think that's going to come through the Farm Bill, is it not?
Yes, the Farm Bill.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And lastly, we'll just quickly run over four bills that have been introduced to limit the acquiring of public land by certain agencies. H.R. 2153, which will limit the Bureau of Land Management from acquiring public land. H.R. 2169, which would defund the National Park Service ability to acquire public land. H.R. 2158, which would defund the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service ability to acquire public land. And H.R. 2207, it would defund the U.S. Forest Service's ability to acquire public land. Just as long as it didn't build roads through it, I'm fine.
So this takes us back. When we first started podcasting, we talked about something called the Great American Outdoors Act. And the Great American Outdoors Act basically... was a bill that was passed to fully fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund. So the Land and Water Conservation Fund was created back, I want to say, in the 60s. And the Land and Water Conservation Fund uses royalties off of offshore energy exploration, usually, you know, petroleum. And it was never fully funded. And the Land and Water Conservation Fund has put a project into every county in every state in our great union. Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, the Land and Water Conservation Fund has been the greatest, I would say, modality or the greatest way that we have done public lands, public waters projects. Now, it's done inner city pools.
Yeah, it's not just hunting and fishing. It's
right.
It's multi-use
yes.
public lands.
And the
one here, there's an LWCF plaque on the baseball field here at the
in Springfield
at the city park.
Yeah. Oh, that's badass!
Yeah,
they helped
fund the new lights being put up.
Okay, so what happens is it's not just your fish and game agencies, but municipalities, county judge executives, state government can apply for grants under the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And the Great American Outdoors Act fully funded that. It had never been fully funded since the 60s when it was created. Congress always found a way to undermine that funding. So now that we have the Great American Outdoors Act fully funded, those people in Congress who believe we shouldn't have public lands, who believe public lands should be sold and managed by the states, which we know means they go away.
Mm-hmm.
States, if you gave all the federal public lands in Idaho to the state of Idaho and they had a massive forest fire, it would bankrupt the state government of Idaho. Even worse, let's talk Wyoming. Wyoming has more public land per capita than any other state in the union. I think Alaska might be, I might be wrong on that. Alaska might have them by a little bit, but it's the least populated state by land mass and population. If, and they don't have the money in Wyoming. If Wyoming had a massive forest fire and the federal government ceded all of that public land that's in those national forests in Wyoming to the state government of Wyoming, they would immediately be applying for FEMA funds for, mm-hmm. for the federal government to bail them out.
Yeah.
They states cannot afford to own and manage this land, so they'd sell it. So all it is by proxy, those people in the federal government that want to get rid of what they call the federal estate, all our federal, and I'm talking about like Yellowstone National Park. I'm talking about, you know, the Gunnison National Forest. I'm talking about, you know, the Tonto National Forest. I'm talking about all these wonderful places that Americans recreate, and we're all equal on public land. That's one of the tenets of the North American model is, you know, the democracy of public land. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, everyone owns public land. And so some of these people, those bills you just read, what they're doing is they're passing laws to prevent government, or they want to pass laws, I should say, the enemies of public land. And I should say, and we don't editorialize, but I should say they're 90% GOP. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have any more public land in the public estate. And since the Great American Outdoors Act fully funded the Land and Water Conservation Fund, there are fish and game agencies, there are county and local governments, there are state governments, there are tribal governments all over the country applying for these grants to increase their public lands and buy up land to give every American access. But then legislators come on, and those bills you just read again, if you don't mind reading them again real quick.
H.R. 2207, H.R. 2158, H.R. 2169, and H.R. 2153.
And all of those are designed to forbid a particular agency, whether it's the Bureau of Land Management or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or something like that, from buying any more public land. So now the money's out there. Great American Outdoors Act fully funded the Land and Water Conservation Fund, and any, you know, state, local government, or fish and game agency can apply for a grant to buy more public land. But, oh, by the way, they're writing bills to specifically prevent agencies from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
It's totally ridiculous. I mean, it's American exceptionalism. It's one of the reasons that America's great is we have these public lands. It doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. Drives me crazy, Ben. Drives me absolutely flipping crazy. I want to, like, throw something at the wall. You know, and that all came out of, and I was a boy when Ronald Reagan was president, and we were all super happy with what he did in just about every agency. But he had an economist on his staff who was the person that first proposed that the federal estate should go away, that we should get rid of all these federal lands because they were expensive. And that is stuck. If you read the current Republican Party platform, it calls for the federal government to divest themselves of public land, transfer to the states. We all know the states are going to sell it. It'll all be, you know, your local, the Daniel Boone National Forest, mm-hmm. would all be, here in Kentucky, would all be private if these people have their way. It's really beyond ridiculous.
Yeah.
What else has your interest right now, brother?
I think that was all I was going to pick up on the national side for today.
Well, right on. So I'm going to go farm bill next.
Okay.
So every 5 years, the farm bill is reauthorized. And the farm bill was last enacted into law under the Trump administration in 2018. And so it's a very extensive process where Congress works to refund the farm bill every 5 years. And so it's due to be reauthorized this year, 2023. And people who don't follow this stuff as much as you and I do will quite often say things like, well, why does the farm bill matter to hunters, fishers, trappers, and boaters? Well, if you've ever heard of CRP, Conservation Reserve Program. If you've ever heard of CREP, there's a lot of programs in the Farm Bill for wildlife habitat. In fact, in the 2018 Farm Bill, there was $12 billion authorized. And that voluntary access program you talked about earlier mm-hmm. is funded through the Farm Bill. So, you know, we really need to make sure that our federal legislators know that, and I've already sent word to Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell myself, and I highly recommend our listeners do. It's the easiest thing on the planet. This is how easy it is to send Rand Paul or Mitch McConnell or your senator, whoever your senators are, or your representatives, Google their name. So Google Senator McConnell. In Kentucky, you could Google any number of our representatives, Representative Comer, Representative Massey. You could Google any number of them, Representative McGarvey, and it'll come up. Their website will come up. You click. There'll be a little drop-down button there that says contact. You pop that up. You type in your name and address so they know that you're a constituent. And the representatives are only going to take comment from those people in their district. So, like, I can only comment to McGarvey. You could only comment to Massey.
Comer.
Comer. So neither one of us could comment to Massey.
Right.
Right. But we have two senators. Anybody in the state can comment to Rand Paul or Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. And you just send them a note. Send them an email. Say, hey, man, it's right there. It's so easy. You fill it out. Please put Wildlife Conservation and Habitat Improvement Programs back in the Farm Bill. Send. If it takes you more than 5 minutes, if hunting, fishing, trapping, and boating is important to you, that takes you more than 5 minutes. It's, you know, I don't know what you're doing wrong. You're doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, go ahead and the same time you do that, type your name and address again and say, please fully fund the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, especially if you're fond of, you know, songbirds, raptors, you know, hawks, owls, all that stuff. All these things, you know, monarch butterflies, you name it. If it's not a game species, that's where the money will come from to finally fund non-game species habitat and improvement work. So anyway, Farm Bill and how to get a hold of those folks. You already went over the Dingell Johnson Voluntary Public Access Improvement Act, which is big on my list. All right, so let's talk about one of the ugliest things that's happened recently. So in the 2022 session, there was a bill passed called the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act of 2022. Some people have labeled that bill as a gun control bill. I don't necessarily agree. But the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act of 2022 was a piece of legislation that was, in fact, as you can tell by the name, bipartisan. And it was designed to give school districts across the country that all get federal grant money guidance on how to do training for school resource officers. And in like Jefferson County Public Schools in Louisville, where I was recently a teacher, we actually have our own small police force. They're actually law enforcement officers. They show up in uniforms, says JCPS law enforcement on it or something like that on the shirt. We had occasion to have them at the school once or twice. But that was what that bill was meant to give guidance on. So in that bill, they defined a dangerous weapon. And a dangerous weapon is anything that can cause serious harm or even death. And if you think about all the programs that are in a school where you use an implement that could cause serious damage or even death, it's ridiculous that the federal grant money will go away. So U.S. Department of Education, under the Biden administration, interpreted the language in the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act of 2022, where it talked about if a school is doing training with a dangerous weapon that could cause serious damage or even death, that they were no longer eligible for federal grant monies. And they've interpreted that to be any school that is doing National Archery in Schools program, Scholastic 3D archery, any kind of shooting sports at high school level, and hunter education. And they've completely defunded those programs with federal grant money. And it's already happened. We've had it in the state of Kentucky. We've had network news stories where seniors who were working on a scholarship to go to college to shoot now don't have a program in the school anymore. Completely defunded it. And so the sponsors of that bill sent the U.S. Department of Education a letter and said, you're misinterpreting that. And the Department of Education came back and said, we'll be happy to work with Congress if Congress changes the language, because we think we are interpreting it correctly. Well, they're not interpreting it correctly. And Safari Club International, that has litigation staff on staff all the time, partnered with the Sportsman's Alliance, who has litigation staff, and they filed notice of intent to sue 9 days ago by my calendar. So tomorrow is the 10th day. So the U.S. Department of Education had 10 days to be in compliance. And the sponsors of the bill are who sent a notice to Department of Education and said, you're interpreting it wrong. It was the members of Congress that sponsored the bill. It wasn't Safari Club and Sportsman's Alliance. But after the congressman did that, to tell them officially, look, it's our bill. We know what we meant when we wrote the language. You're interpreting correctly. So the experts are those congressmen that wrote the bill,
yeah,
not the U.S. Department of Education under the Biden administration. So they wrote that letter. As soon as they did that, then Safari Club International and the Sportsman's Alliance were sure that they were right. So then they filed notice of intent to sue the U.S. Department of Education if they don't change their stance. It's going to get fixed. But here's the bad part. The Bipartisan Safer Communities Act of 2022 was developed in reaction to school shootings, like what happened, the terrible shooting in Uvalde, Texas. And there's a lot in that bill that speaks to mental health programs in high schools and things that are supposed to make the kids happy and fully functional members of society. And the U.S. Department of Education is now defunding programs for national archery in the schools, the shooting sports, and hunter education. Some of the best kids in school are in the National Archery and Schools program. These are kids that are not going to make the football team or the basketball team. I'm just here to tell you. Maybe a few kids that are on the baseball team, basketball team, football team, the flagship high school sports, mm-hmm, also shoot natural archery in schools. Generally, it's the kids that don't have the God-given talent to run, jump, catch, and do the athletic things. It's kids that can concentrate, kids that can focus. And kids that can learn to shoot a bow, learn to shoot an air rifle, learn to shoot a shotgun. And they get the positive mental health and leadership benefits of being on a high school team where they previously didn't have the God-given talent to do that. And now we're ruining the freshman first year to try to be on these teams, the sophomore's second year to develop on those teams, the junior's third year to try to talk to colleges about their scholarship potential, and we're ruining the seniors. We're ruining 4 years of kids right now by not funding these programs. We're ruining 4 years of kids' opportunities to earn a scholarship and to be on a team. So the bill is intended to give guidance to school districts on school resource officers and school police officers and who can carry a gun in schools, and schools are not allowed to train teachers to carry a gun based on this bill. Got it. U.S. Department of Education has interpreted it since it lists dangerous weapons, which is anything that can do severe harm or death. I mean, you couldn't teach a culinary class now. It literally lists pocket knife 2.5 inches is allowed. Anything bigger is not allowed. You couldn't teach a culinary class. You couldn't teach, you know, the food service sciences if a kid's got to have a knife to be able to, like, chop up vegetables. Mm-hmm. It's one of the worst things that's happened lately. Thank God for Safari Club International and Sportsman's Alliance for stepping up immediately and putting the Department of Education on notice. Congress has already said, look, we'll come back when we get in session and immediately change the language. But that's not going to be fast enough to save this year. This year's kids are not going to get their programs. If you are the kind of person that has a kid in National Archery and Schools program, or you have a child in Scholastic 3D Archery, or you have a child in 4-H Clay Target Leagues, or you have a kid that's in JROTC Air Rifle League, or air rifle competition, you need to contact your senators and representatives and tell them to fix this.
Yep.
And once again, just Google their name. My senator, Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell. Google their name. There'll be a contact button. There'll be a form there where you can easily fill it out and say, hey, you need to fix the Department of Education not funding archery in the schools and the school shooting sports and hunter education. And you can Google your representative, too. Mine's Morgan McGarvey. Yours is our former Secretary of Agriculture here in the state.
Jim Comer.
Yep, now Congressman Comer. It's too easy, folks, to get involved. And that's your civic duty. That is your civic duty, right? Everybody says, well, I don't want to get political. Political is when you work towards an end to achieve something that's on the Democratic or the Republican Party's platform. If you read their party platform and you're working to achieve one of their party goals, you're being political. If you're telling the elected officials who work for us, they're paid with our tax dollars. If you're telling them what's important to you, then you're doing your job as a citizen. This is a representative democracy. It's not meant for those people to get elected and go to D.C. and do whatever the hell they want. They're still supposed to be doing what the hell we want.
Exactly right.
Sorry, I was on a soapbox for a little bit there.
Issues like that, it's granted.
Whew.
It is welcome.
Yeah, so we got a pretty good fall coming up. All that heavy stuff aside, we do have a pretty good fall coming up. Our bear season in Kentucky has been expanded. We have additional opportunities for bears. We gave away another 500 lotteried, raffled, whatever you say, another 596 elk tags, and we've got friends that drew elk tags. Mm-hmm. Our BHA chapter coordinator, Jameson Hibbs, got an elk tag. I know a couple other people got state elk tags. I think it's going to be a good year. I really, really do. Yeah. We have plenty of rain this summer. I am looking to take you duck hunting, bro.
You know I'm down for that.
I'm looking
just
to take you
duck
hunting.
Let me know when you're going, and I'll tag right along.
I've learned a lot from Larry Richards and Brian Mackey over the last 5-6 years, and I want to try hunting the bigger lakes now. I've got some spots where I've been fishing where I've seen some resident ducks and resident geese, mm-hmm. and if they're hanging out there now, guess where they're going to be during the season migration?
Yep.
Pretty close. So yeah. I've got that War Eagle boat, the camouflage boat.
Mm-hmm.
So probably be picking you up at State Park Ramp there at Green River Lake.
That sounds like a plan.
See if we can't whack some ducks.
And starting, was it next Friday? Quota applications come available.
Yes. And September 1st, for everybody's listening, if we get this podcast posted and distributed through social media, September 1st for our Kentucky residents is your application, I believe, for Sandhill Cranes.
And your waterfowl blinds.
And your waterfowl blinds. A lot coming up, a lot to pay attention to. That was Down and Dirty, one of our quicker podcasts. But, you know, there isn't a lot going on at the federal level right now. But what is going on is pretty amazing, like improvements to the Farm Bill and potentially funding RAWA or the Recovering America's Wildlife Act. But then there's some ugly stuff like the U.S. Department of Education misinterpreting language in the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act to defund shooting in the schools, archery in the schools. I shouldn't say shooting in the schools, shooting sports in the schools. And it's actually not in the schools. It's, you know, it's 4-H or the National Rifle Association, 4-H or NRA, take kids after school to a clay pigeon range where they shoot competitively clay pigeons. But anyway, the Department of Education, you know, misinterpreting and not funding the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act of 2022 is hurting children right now.
Yep.
Their favorite sports are not being funded at the federal level, and that money is direct. There are districts that are shutting those sports down because the money they use to fund those sports is not the same money they use to fund football, basketball, baseball. And oh, by the way, shooting sports, whether it's archery or clay pigeons or air rifle, it are three of the least injury-producing sports in high school. The most injury-producing sport in high school is basketball, second's football, third's baseball, and then you get into kind of like a tie between lacrosse, field hockey, volleyball. They hurt hundreds of thousands of kids nationwide every year playing basketball and football. Mm-hmm. They didn't hurt 15 kids last year with shooting sports. The first thing that the kids have to do in shooting sports, whether it's archery or clay pigeons or air rifle, is they have to pass a safety test. If you can't pass a safety test, you can't be on the team. They're the safest sports in high school, and they're for kids that aren't normally the kids that play football, basketball, volleyball, soccer. Which, what does that say to you? They're kids that could use a team. Mm-hmm. They're kids that Absolutely. Probably need an organization to belong to give themselves, you know, some greater self-esteem, some greater self-worth, you know.
A sense of belonging.
Sense of belonging. Yep. And we're defunding those programs. Way to go, Biden administration. That's just bull crap.
Yep.
Where are we at, man? What else?
I've got nothing else on my end.
Okay, so I guess we'll be doing another national level issues State of the Outdoors podcast sometime in October, because our September show will be about what goes on at the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting, and that's me and Brian Mackey, former commissioner. So, well, good stuff, man. Appreciate you being on. It's fun to be at Mordecai's. This is where we first podcasted, our very first podcast ever, I think.
I believe so, yeah.
It was the test podcast, right? We did a test here.
No, we did that at someplace in Louisville. We did a test one. But I think our actual first You're or right. second episode
You're exactly
we did
right.
here.
We did yeah, our we first. Did, we did a test somewhere in Louisville at a restaurant.
Yeah.
Because we bought these noise-canceling headphones.
Hopcat. That's
yes.
what it was.
Hopcat in Louisville, which no longer exists.
Yeah.
Yeah. The during the coronavirus tragedy of 2020, 2021, it was one of the businesses that shut down in Louisville, which is another tragedy that we don't talk about on podcasts like this. But we'll see each other again soon, and we will podcast about national issues again in October. The September show will be about the September 22nd Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources here in Kentucky's commission meeting. We'd like to thank Grayson Jenkins, Kentucky recording artist that very generously allows us to use his music for the intro and the ending of this show. This show is part of the Slow Hunt LLC network. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening. And we'll talk to you again next month. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks.